move to the next case after everybody gets settled. This is Central States versus Hunt Truck Lines. Mr. Aitken?
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Herb Aitken, and I represent Hunt Truck Lines. I have 10 minutes. I reserve 5. And I have 5 major points to make to you. The first is what I believe is most crucial to your determination is that Central State's injury, in this case, was Hunt's failure to make withdrawal liability payments under the revised demand, and that that injury occurred before Central State filed its complaint before Judge Shader and before this court in February of 2000 had the opportunity to address this matter. And I'll refer to that prospectively as Hunt number one. It was at issue in that case. It could have been at issue in that case. And res judicata bars this action because this court, in its prior decision, and I could quote you the line if you wish, found that Central States could have asked for monetary relief before Judge Shader and correspondingly before the court in the opinion written by Judge Evans. And therefore, the broad black and white letter doctrine of res judicata precludes the parties or their privies from relitigating issues that were or could have been raised in that action.
I mean, before Judge Shader, you're saying that instead of a motion for enforcement, it should have been for modification and enforcement?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Please take a look at 29 U.S.C. 1401 small b2. That is the section by which Central States appealed the arbitration case to Judge Shader. That section provides for enforcement, for modification, and for vacation. When Central States filed its appeal, and it filed its appeal hastily within one day after the arbitrator finalized his decision, it simply asked for enforcement. That was October 15, 1998. It had 172 days until Judge Shader issued his decision on April 8, 1999, to amend its complaint, seeking modification to provide for monetary relief. It failed to do so. It could have done so, and that is why this case is precluded. That is why we believe this case is precluded by the doctrine of res judicata as provided by a plethora of Supreme Court cases headed up by Federal Department v. Modi, and I believe that's in my briefs at 452 U.S. 398, and a case I'll mention hereinafter of this court in Brazostowski v. Laidlaw, or Laidlaw v. Brazostowski, and forgive me, I may be mispronouncing that. But from that crucial factor that the revised demand, which was issued on July 1, 1998, was in play before Shader, was in play before this court's decision earlier in Hunt 1 by Evans, from that factor, all else flows, and we submit that this case is precluded by res judicata.
Well, given the previous appeal, Judge Evans' opinion, and I guess to some extent the attorney's fees opinion by Judge Wood was the author of that one, does that change the situation that we would be reviewing with regard to Judge Shader?
Absolutely not. The facts are as they are. They were in play prior to the Evans decision. If you're looking at are you addressing the final paragraph of the court statement about prospective relief by Judge Evans?
We have a thing in this court called successive appeal. This would logically have been a successive appeal for the same panel. Unfortunately, that isn't the case. So here we are trying to figure out what exactly the previous panel did or did not do that would preclude or allow us to do what you want to do.
Thank you. Let me go back to Judge Evans' decision. Judge Evans decided there was a consolidation of two cases, the Judge Norberg case and the Judge Shader case. Three things were decided by Judge Evans. The first thing was the appeal of Norberg. Interim payments were not permitted because they violated the statutory prerequisites of the memo. That's one. Number two, Judge Shader enforced the enforcement of this complaint. Judge Evans affirmed the enforcement of this complaint by Judge Shader and basically said the fund got what it asked for. The third area was Judge Shader affirmed, Judge Evans affirmed Judge Shader's denial of the 59E motion to amend, basically saying since the judge was not wrong on the merits, he had nothing to correct. Then, in a paragraph that runs contrary to the entire decision, it's contradictory because the first three decisions made, and these decisions were at issue before Judge Evans, were for no relief. Then Judge Evans made his comment that I'm sure Central States will tell you about, and I'll attempt to rebut in about the 4.5 minutes I have. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Franzik?
May it please the Court. As Your Honors have already noted, this panel is not writing on a clean slate. Indeed, this Court has addressed this issue on not one but two prior occasions. Mr. Akin points out for Hunt that the facts are as they are, and they were those facts when this Court addressed the issue in the first appeal. Therefore, Your Honors, nothing has changed since that first appeal to change the result dictated by this Court in that case.
What did it dictate?
Your Honor, in the Court's opinion, the Court stated that Central States argued that affirmation of both judgments would leave it in, quote, in an odd and unjust position whereby Central States could not collect withdrawal liability that is undoubtedly owed. That's how the Court framed Central States' argument. At the end of the case, the Court states, in response to Central States' argument that if you affirm both of these decisions, we might be doomed because there will be no avenue of relief, the Court says, finally, we wish to make absolutely clear that while Central States cannot recover on this appeal, our decision does not preclude future recovery. In fact, it appears certain that Central States will and should receive the full withdrawal fee to which it is entitled. As per Arbitrator Jaffe's award, the fund has issued Hunt a renewed demand. Central States appears to be under the impression that either Judge Nordberg's or Judge Shader's opinions preclude it from collecting on this second demand. This is not the case. Since both judges' rulings focus solely on the prior premature demand, Hunt should comply with the fund's later demand. Indeed, it should already be complying. If Hunt fails to pay on this demand, Central States need merely file suit under the MEPA's enforcement scheme to ensure that it receives interim payments. Now, Mr. Akin says that part of the opinion is contradictory to the other parts of the opinion.
Maybe that assumes that you should have requested modification rather than enforcement.
It doesn't assume that, Your Honor. It says that it's talking about the future post-appeal. It says Hunt should be complying with the demand, and if it fails to pay, Central States need merely file suit to ensure that it receives the payments. And that is the only way that the Court was able to rationalize affirming both of the decisions. Now, Mr. Akin says, well, that contradicts the other parts of the case. Well, if that...
You say the Court was able to rationalize which court?
This Court, Your Honor. In deciding, Central States' point was, you must reverse at least one of these opinions. We have to collect either via the Judge Nordberg action or collect via the Judge Shader action. So you can't affirm both of those decisions because otherwise we're left in the lurch. And the Court responded then to that's not a real dilemma because nothing in our decision today will preclude you from enforcing the revised demand. So what Mr. Akin is essentially wants is take and eats it too. He wants to say take the decision for what it was when it helped us, but disregard the analytical underpinnings of the decision when it doesn't help us. And indeed, the district court noted this precise fact. The district court said the language of the Seventh Circuit can only be concluded to be part of the holding of the court, and that this language clearly explained the court's rationale in reaching its decision to affirm Judge Chater. If the last paragraph of the Seventh Circuit's opinion was deleted, it would in fact impair the analytical holding, because the third and fourth sentences affirm the fact that both judges dealt with the procedural consequences of the premature demand.
But see, this is sort of a dilemma. There's no question that Central States should have asked for modification as well as enforcement before Judge Chater, right?
That's not necessarily true, Your Honor.
Wait a minute. Why not?
Well, in this situation, procedurally, you almost have what's akin to a remand, Your Honor. It's almost as if the court had said, and the arbitrator had said, the first notice and demand, was premature. Go and issue a revised demand. The fact that a party ends up having to deal with essentially what is akin to a remand doesn't mean that if the party doesn't later comply that you can't enforce. There's a difference between a decision which says that it was an appropriate remedy for the prior premature demand to issue a revised demand and an action to collect under the revised demand.
Well, as far as when I read the interim award, here's what the court, the Jaffe said not to do. Not to void the assessment and not to direct the parties to begin anew. And all he wanted was that the fund is directed to issue a revised demand, including the revised payment schedule, which you did.
That's correct, Your Honor.
The only problem is that there was no, whatever you want to call it, order or directive to pay. And that's what was you asked to enforce, as opposed to asking for a modification, said, oh, yeah, and also we need to include a directive to pay. And that's where I don't see any difference in what you would have to go back and do. That's where it's res judicata. Now, true, we have this interim appellate decision, and we have to reconcile it. But I don't see what you're going to do except the same thing over again.
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Akin points out that he says that the last paragraph is contradictory to the rest of the case. And what essentially the court would need to do here is say the first opinion was wrong, and so you lose this case, but of course we can't unring the bell and go back and say, well, because the analytical underpinnings of the first decision were wrong, really we should have not done what we did in the first case. You can't unring the bell. What it essentially would be is the court would have to say we were mistaken in the first case, so Central States loses this case, but we can't go back and fix the original case and have Central States win in that case to fix the problem.
Well, you mean fix it by saying Judge Chater should have modified?
Saying that the arbitrator's award implicitly meant that there should have been a money judgment, or indeed the analytical underpinnings of the Judge Nordberg decision. Remember that the Judge Nordberg decision, the court essentially consoled itself with the decision that, well, in this case, Central States made a procedural blunder, but we are comfortable saying that Central States loses this case because they can recover later. Now,
do you think the first court here should have said either? Well, the Jaffe opinion really implied that it should have said, or we'll add a sentence, that and also they'll have to pay, or that Judge Chater, in spite of the fact that he had before him only an enforcement of something that did not say they have to pay, he should have modified it anyway. It seems to me that's what you're saying the previous court either should have said or else did say by implication.
What I'm saying, Your Honor, is that the court in Hunt 1, being this court, believed when it issued its decision that Central States would be able to recover prospectively. And if that is not the case, the whole decision, the whole house of cards, falls apart on the original this court's original decision.
Well, we have to somehow bypass res judicata. It would do some sort of an equitable thing, I guess.
Your Honor, in this case, you don't need to bypass res judicata. The court has already essentially made its ruling on the issue. Mr. Aiken says all the facts were in play in the first appeal. The first judgments were already entered. Well, if it was res judicata, it was obvious that it was res judicata at that point. And the court nevertheless says that uses the word preclude and notes specifically that Central States was concerned that the affirmance of both decisions would preclude it from collecting, and the court said that's not true. So the issue was before the court whether or not it was closed in the res judicata argument. That's precisely the danger that Central States argued would result in the first case, and the court said that's not true, so we feel comfortable ruling the way we're ruling. Now what Hunt is in effect saying is take away the whole support for what the court did in the first case. Of course, we can't go back and unring the bell on that opinion. We have to go, so Central State still effectively loses in that case, but they lose here too, because the court was mistaken in its first opinion. And that's on the bottom line of what Mr. Aiken is arguing. It's asking this court to revisit an issue which the court already addressed with the same parties in these arguments. There's really, as Mr. Aiken says, there are no new facts. There's nothing new. These judgments were all entered in the court's first opinion. And this was the reason why Central States desperately argued against what the court ultimately ruled in the first case. But that's water under the bridge now. I see my time is up, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Aiken.
I wish my wife respected me as much as Mr. Kranchek apparently does. Central States never sought money, either in the arbitration case, and that's why the arbitration case did not award money, and they never asked for modification for money before Judge Shader. If they had, we would not have appealed the first case to Judge Evans. Secondly, the Judge Evans decision can best be read by looking at that paragraph as dictum. It is contradictory to the elements of what he held. Basically, the court's prior statement, we think, is dictum because the court never considered the issue of res judicata. In fact, Central States in the supplemental appendix admitted in the district court below that the issue of res judicata was never briefed or argued during the previous appeal before Judge Evans. As stated in this court's decision in U.S. v. Crawley, the issue addressed in the passage was not presented as an issue, was not refined by the fires of the adversary presentation, and therefore it was not a fully measured judicial pronouncement. Therefore, it was dictum.
Well, what was the issue then, as argued? Obviously, those were two different decisions that were appealed. Does that create a distinction or a wedge that would make it different than what the issue is now?
Great question, but the answer is no. And because MEFA provides for interim payments, which is the case that was before Norberg, and we, Hunt, won that case, and then it provides for enforcement of an arbitration award. It requires that facts be determined in arbitration, and that was the case that Central States appealed before Judge Shader.
Stay in front of the microphone.
I'm sorry. Basically, what we have here is that the entire matter, the crucial facts were that the revised demand was issued 108 days before the complaint was issued before Judge Shader. If Central States had sought modification, to ask for money, they would have won. We wouldn't be here. They didn't do it, and therefore this case is precluded by res judicata. Same cause of action. Please look at Brostenkowski. I'm racing now because of a lack of time. Basically, this circuit uses the same transaction test. The claim has identity if it emerges from the same core of operative facts. In Brostenkowski, the core of operative facts referred to the relationship between Laidlaw and Mr. Brostenkowski, It referred to Laidlaw's employment actions and Brostenkowski's termination. The claim, the core of operative facts here is Hunt's participation and withdrawal from Central States. Those claims, therefore the claim for the revised demand, has identity, under the revised demand has identity with the first claim, because they in fact are the same claim. They're the same claim for the same principal amount of money, and it's the same cause of action. The same claim, unlike Brostenkowski, which included two different claims, one for age discrimination and one for enforcement of a breach of an employment contract. This is the final judgment. All that is required is that there be a final judgment. The final and the Central States had the opportunity to request money before Judge Shader. Both exist. This case went up before on 28-1291. It was appealed thereunder, and finality for res judicata as finality in 1291 is basically the same thing. There is no new wrong. Last point, please. There is no new wrong because essentially the same conduct of wrongful action is in play, and typically a new wrong requires two wrongful acts. There's not one wrongful act here, two wrongful acts, there's only one, and that was in play months before the case was brought before Judge Shader. Thank you for your time.
Okay, case taken under advisement.